Your reasons for listening to the show, well, hello, those are your own. But just keep in mind that the views, information, or opinions expressed on the Tuttle Daily Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Yeah, it's called free speech, people.
Nobody's forcing you to listen.
Get ready for your daily dose of Tuttle.
The all-time greatest intern slash producer we've ever had, of course. Tuttle in Florida.
From the Hobo Fish Camp, it's the Tuttle Daily Podcast.
No wonder nobody likes you, Tuttle. Everything's a goddamn debate.
All right, so I need a mic check. How are things going? I think I sound pretty good. Yeah, so thank you. Willie Cogley comes in, says, all good. All right. my good friend Ian Hanna, he's been supporting the show for a really, really long time. Sounds nerdish. Fish on Jay, sounding good, Pat. You know, I've had to actually start the show, then log out of the browser, then log back in. That is what I've had to do. Oh, look at that. Iggy T is in early. How are you, Iggy? I mean, you're becoming a chat favorite, Iggy. Everybody, look at Fish on Jay. Fish on Jay. Hey, Iggy, how you feeling? How's it feel, Iggy, that, like, you have, Willie, I am using OBS, and I'm having to do that. How did you know that, by the way? I am using OBS. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. But I'm just having to do what I gotta do. I'm sorry that I'm a little off, because the first thing I wanted to get into is not like something that I particularly wanted to get into. But if you would like to reach out, I love a lot of, you know, engagement. Yeah, I know. Well, Willie, I'm sorry. I did not mean to, like, throw shade at you. But Willie writes, you forgot where I come from. A bunch of streamers. We are the dude. Legion of dude. You know what? I've been doing this content since the beginning of 2020. And I got to say, the Legion of dude, I could not have been lucky enough that the Legion of Dude decided to, like, pick my stream and try to raid my show on a Friday night. It's been one of the best things. I mean, they are very, very loyal. And I do apologize that I didn't, like, jump on Friday to hang out with you guys. I really, really feel bad, but I had a lot of stuff going on. And that kind of leads me into my first topic. I had to turn off my Facebook memories. Sometimes Facebook memories are good, and then sometimes they are just a big kick in the balls. It's just like a NFL kicker lining up. Your crotch is right there, lined up. He's about to kick a 60-yard field goal. And he kicks you right in the nuts. That is what Facebook memories are sometimes. And, you know, a lot of the people that know me personally, especially family members, probably think that I don't care, or like I'm being heartless or whatever it may be. It's not the case. I've had to be strong around my mom, because it's just me and my mom. I have no siblings. we don't have a lot of family members, but the Facebook memory it came up was a thing that I had shared. And a lot of people are probably like, why do you share stuff like this? It is like therapy to me. But the thing that popped up over the weekend, and I knew that it was coming up, but it was a big kick in the balls because I saw a message that I had sent out on all my social media a year ago about my dad. It is coming up on a year since my dad, I lost my dad. And I know a lot of people. Hey, Alan, thank you, man. Alan, hey, family, one love here. He says, I've been listening to Patrick since I was a teenager. Why? One, that makes me feel really old, and number two, that is one of the kindest things that somebody can say to me. Thank you, Alan. I really, and I know he says no troll here, and I know that. But it has been a year since I lost my dad. And thank you, Willie. Willie Cogley writes, my condolences, man. My condolences. May your dad, I'm sorry, because I'm starting to get a lot of tears and stuff. But, yeah, man, because my dad, we still do not know exactly what happened. But towards the end, my dad really was not making a lot of sense. And I'm not saying anything bad about him or whatever, but the message that came up on Facebook memories just broke my heart. Because every day that I would leave the hospital, I would tell my dad that he loved me, and I wasn't getting anything back. I was not getting anything back. I mean, he was saying some stuff, and the thing that I was able to keep me going was that I was like, all right, so maybe the wires are crossed, because he was saying some stuff. And I always was like, all right, that is him trying to tell me that he loved me. Because in the tweet, the Instagram stuff, Facebook, I was like, I just wanted to hear my dad say he loved me one more time. And I'm sorry to get all heavy at the beginning of the show and stuff, but that's the thing about this podcast that I'm doing. The content is about being real and sharing things. Wow. I got a Bubba Army royalty in there. Dark Match Steve. You know, Dark Match Steve is, in my opinion, a very, very talented guy. For a listener and stuff to be able to come on and do stuff on Bubba's show, that takes a lot of time. Fish on Jay, he's a good friend of mine, and this means a lot what Fish on Jay just wrote. It was an honor to break bread and have beers with him. Cheers to Mr. Wayne Fowler. So, I don't want you guys to think that the beginning of the show is going to be a downer and stuff, but I just wanted to share with you. You know, a lot of you guys still have your loved ones around. You may have siblings, which I do not have. I'm not close with other family members and stuff. So I'm going to be on my own and everything when I lose my mom and stuff. So I've had to be strong in front of her. And, you know, what really makes me feel bad is that I think she thinks that I'm being heartless or I don't care, but I do care. I really, really do care. And the only thing that I can tell my mom is that my dad was not afraid of death. Because you got to realize that my mom has gone through a lot of health problems. She has been cancer numerous times. She's had a lot of other health issues and stuff. And the one thing that my dad always said that, you know, it's something that's always going to happen to everyone. It's the one thing that every human being on the face of the planet has in common. You know, fuck all this racism, religion, all that bullshit that separates us. My dad, and Drew Garabo used to say that all the time. The one thing the one common denominator that we all have in common is that we're all going to die one day. My dad was not afraid of dying. And the one thing that I tell my mom, dad was not afraid of dying. And Fish on Jay is in here. Fish on Jay can attest to this. My dad was the type of person that he would not want us to be sad. He would not want us to be sad. And that is the only thing that keeps me going. Not completely breaking down. And you know what the sad thing is? Is my dad's birthday happened while he was in the hospital. My dad's birthday happened while he was in the hospital before he went to hospice. And it sucked. It sucked celebrating my dad's last birthday in a hospital where I don't even know if he knew what was going on. So, anyways, I'm sorry. I apologize that I started off the show on like a Debbie Downer type moment. But I promise you, I got a great show lined up. And I also think that it is part of what I do. I think it's a part of what I do to share what's going on in my life. Because everything that I want to do is to be able to entertain you guys. To be able to entertain you and help you get through hard times. To get your mind off of your problems. But I also think that sometimes when you're doing stuff like this, that you need to share what you're going through. Because there could be one single person. A lot of people ask me, why did I share? I'm sorry, guys. Why did I share me trying to kill myself after like mere hours after I did it when I went into the Bubba the Love Sponge show? I shared it because, one, I wanted to make sure that people knew what I tried to do to hold me accountable in case I tried to do it again. And number two was to, if there was one audience member out there that was listening to the show that maybe might be going through what I did or what I was going through, and it could help them. That is the only reason. That is the only reason why I talked about it. And to be honest, after I talked about it, I wish that I wouldn't have talked about it because I had to spend the worst 11 days of my life in the mental institution. It was horrible. And it was so horrible that it made me change my life. Wow, that really means a lot, Iggy. Iggy writes, your dad raised a wonderful, kind human. All right, I'm not doing a bunch of cocaine, people, but... And Willie writes, you're a good human, T. All right, so I do have an interview coming up at 7:30. But I did want to get into, law enforcement gets a bad rap. You know, everybody thinks that they are just racist or, you know, they're profiling people and stuff. But I got to tell you, this story that happened in Orange County. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's his job and stuff. Oh, why is this such a big story? There was an apartment fire in Orange County that the fire department had not shown up yet. And there was a mother and a baby on the third floor of this apartment building. And this Orange County sheriff's officer climbed up three stories to rescue a baby.
This happened at the Isles of East Millennium apartment complex in Orange County early this morning. When deputies and firefighters got there, they found one of the apartments up in flames.
By the way, coming up 7:30, author James Bailey's going to join me. And I think you're going to want to listen and watch it because I did a lot of show prep. I hope to God that he shows up. So that's coming up at 7:30.
You can see the fire shooting through the roof. Deputies then rushed in to see what they could do. And one deputy, William Pazinski, took off his bulletproof vest and threw it on the ground so he could start climbing up the balconies. And it just so happened that the body camera on his vest landed facing up.
Hey, thank you. Twisted Movie says, looking forward to it. Willie Cogley writes, there is good and bad cops like there is good and bad mechanics. We cannot fault the job for the human condition. I agree. I really can't agree with you more, Willie.
Capturing everything. Watch.
Oh, we're coming. Hand me your baby.
I mean, this is some... that's the thing about it. Is everything's on camera. He threw his vest down that had his body camera on it. And it just happened to be shooting up. Look at this. I mean, it could not have happened any more perfectly. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh, they did. This is a big promotional thing for the cops. He threw his vest down perfectly so everybody could see him climbing up three stories to save a baby. I don't think so.
Hey,
all right, so it looks like he is on the second floor. What he's doing is he's climbing up each balcony, and then he's, like, it looks like he is stepping up on each, like, guardrail to be able to get up to the next level. I mean, is there anything worse than a screaming, crying baby? And I'm not talking about a baby that is just being a dick. I know I shouldn't call a baby a dick, but this baby is afraid for its life. So he's up there. You can look at him. He's looking up. And now he's going to get on top of that guardrail to get up to the next level.
Oh,
lot of people are going to say, oh, he's just doing his job. You know, a lot of people. No, I'm sorry. We're all human beings. I don't care what your job is, even if it is to protect and serve. But this guy is not a firefighter. He is law enforcement. And the fire department was not. He climbed up there. Now he's climbing up to the next level to get the baby. And I do apologize to the people that listen to the audio version. That's why I'm trying to describe as best as I can on what's going on. Now he's got the baby. He's got the baby. Oh, by the way, hold on. What did Alan say? Do you think we're going to get a modge podge of firefighters and police officers that are going to try to get clout? You know what? This guy, I think he deserves it. Sorry. I know a lot of people want to say that he's just doing his job. But would you say the same thing about a soldier? You guys know that my producer is a Marine. He's still in the military and stuff. But what I'm trying to say, though, is that I know that it's her job. That's what they're getting paid for. But there's a lot of people that are just ordinary, everyday Americans that would not do this. So he's got the baby.
Grab this baby.
Oh, he's dropping the baby down to the next level.
Amazing. The sheriff's office tells us.
By the way, I'll tell you an interesting story. Eric Von Aiken, when I first started dating my wife, hell, I think this might have been before we were even engaged. Eric Von Aiken, my wife worked at, she was a paralegal at a lawyer's office, and they had a gym that they could all work at. Eric Von Aiken used to work out with my wife. My wife would always say, and it was always a running joke. I don't know. Look, nothing happened, but it used to be a running joke that was like, oh, you see, Eric Von Aiken is on the news right now, your workout buddy. But Eric Von Aiken is the anchor reporting this story about this amazing rescue that this Orange County sheriff climbed up three stories to save this baby.
So the deputies passed the baby all the way back down to the ground safely. Then they got the mom down using a ladder. News 6's Amanda Castro talked to that deputy right afterwards, and she has a closer look at that fire that damaged 20 apartments.
Flames ripping through the roof of this building at the Isles at East Millennia Apartments early Saturday morning. Not far away, Orange County Sheriff's Deputy William Pizzini.
I'm telling you right now, if I live on the third story, and maybe this, and this kind of fits into the interview that I got coming up at 7:30 about OCD or overthinking things. Because if I lived on the third story, bet your ass I'm going to have enough rope to be able to hang off the side of the balcony for my ass to be able to climb down. Didn't we all think that after September 11th? If you, like, worked on a high-rise or a skyscraper like the Twin Towers, even if you didn't know how to, Willie says the same thing. I would have the rope or a ladder. Everybody was talking about parachutes and stuff. I've never parachuted in my life. Maybe I would want to learn. But bet your ass that I would like to have a parachute with me if I worked on the 90th floor of a skyscraper. You know how many people jumped out of the Twin Towers? They didn't have parachutes, but I would love to have at least a parachute. At least you got a fighting chance. Even if you've never parachuted in your life, at least you could strap that bad boy on your back and jump out of it and try to pull the ripcord, right? At least you got a chance. And I don't know if that makes me a weirdo that I think about stuff like that, but I do.
Zelensky was patrolling when he got the call about the two-alarm fire.
When we got here, we saw the building fully engulfed.
Alan says, I agree.
There's chaos everywhere.
He says he saw families trapped on each floor of the three-story building, hanging on the balconies. And then he heard a baby screaming.
And then I saw on the third balcony there was a one-year-old baby.
By the way, look at this. How old do you think this kid is? Gotta be in his 20s, maybe early 20s, mid-20s. And if you're kind of, if you're wanting to stretch it, he's definitely in his 20s, no matter what. And this guy, how many 20-year-olds, you know, if you want to give you, oh, he's just doing his job. How many 20-year-olds, I don't care what their job is, would climb out three stories to save a baby? I mean, Willie agrees with me. Willie says early to mid-20s, possibly right out of high school. Good polish, man. Fish on Jay says, you're in shape, Pat. You could crawl Willie down the mother effer. Maybe. I mean, maybe you're right. Alan says, life has become humble. You can see it in his eyes. So don't give me any of this bullshit that it's just his job. And, you know, Fish on Jay nailed it. I bet someone fell asleep with a Newport in their mouth and caused a fire. Probably. That's why you want to have a rope. I know three stories, a parachute wouldn't do any good. That's why I said, have a rope so you can crawl down.
That the mom was trying to get over. And so at that moment, I knew that I had to save the baby.
With help from his fellow deputies, he scaled the building.
And then I just climbed up to the third, grabbed the baby. And
I mean, that is a hell of a fire. That is no, like, pussy-ass fire.
And again, that's when I handed the baby down to my partners. And then they also helped me down.
Blue meanies.
Afterwards, when the mom came and found me, she actually gave me a hug, so it was rewarding.
As Pazinski was rescuing the baby, Orange County Fire Rescue arrived on scene.
And I've been being, from watching this guy's interview, he looks uncomfortable being on video. He probably does not want to even be on camera. He probably seems like the type of guy that doesn't want to be on camera, but with all the bad publicity and stuff that law enforcement are getting, they're like, hey man, I know that you don't want to be, but this is good for us. I know a lot of people hate cops. I know last week I talked about the run-in with a rude cop, but who knows? Who knows what type of day that he was having? But I think this is good for community relations, but that's the point that it's come to.
Firefighters saving seven more people trapped in the building.
They threw ladders to the building, and they were able to get everybody out safely.
Fire Rescue says it took about an hour to knock down the fire, staying on scene hours later, monitoring the building for any flare-ups. OCFR says 12 units were impacted, and they shut off the power to the building, forcing everyone to leave. We're told apartment management.
And you know what? The thing is that the people that own, or the company that owns this building, you know how many, I've lived in Central Florida all my life. I've seen so many of these house fires happen at these apartment complexes and stuff, and they don't have insurance, and the tenants are just shit out of luck. They're shit out of luck. And they got to call in the Red Cross for a bunch of people in an apartment complex? Fish on J, you're right. Fish on J writes, that dude is going to get so much ass after that video. And you know what? He deserves it. He deserves everything. You know, if any woman was like, hey, I appreciate that you saved that baby, and I'm just wanting to give you I'm going to kick it out wide for you. And, you know, if you don't listen to Bubba's show, kick it out wide. I mean, it's pretty much self-explanatory.
And the Red Cross is helping displaced residents find places to stay. Fire Rescue says the fire started on the first floor, and the cause of it is still unknown.
Newport.
The state fire marshal is investigating.
The state fire marshal comes out depending on the...
Jesus Christ. I mean, this battalion chief. Look at how young this guy looks. I almost called him an asshole.
...extent of the damage, or if there's suspicion of...
Man, look at that roof. Man, oh man. That's why you want to have a rope ladder, or whatever it may be. Hell, a slide going out of the side of the balcony. Whatever works.
Illegal activity at this point. That's under investigation.
As for the deputy, he says he's glad he was there to help.
Oh yeah, look at him though. He's got blue eyes. Look. Yeah, probably 30. Look at the blue eyes on Fish on Jay's right. I bet he got ass on ass even before he saved that baby from the balcony three stories up. I mean, look, I'm comfortable with my sexuality, but he's a good-looking kid. Blue eyes, tight haircut. I mean, Willie Cogley, he keeps getting younger and younger. The deputy looks like he's no older than 22. I mean, this guy is set up with his pick. All right, my guest is on. So, you know what? I'm going to bring him on.
Sorry about that, my friend. The damn internet.
No. Don't worry about it. Hold on. Give me one second, James. Let me get this. Hey, how are you, my friend?
Good.
Hey, James.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Tuttle Daily Podcast. There's a lot of stuff. I was looking. James Bailey is a very one of those names that a lot of people have and stuff. And I saw your book review where it's available and stuff. So okay. before we get into the interview, tell my supporters, my audience, a little bit about yourself. And your book, where people can find it, where people can find out any of the content and stuff before we get into the interview.
Well, here's the book. It's at Amazon for about $10. The Diary of a Manic OCD Bookseller.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel Brooks has a great blurb on the back. And Larry
Hold on. Wait, I cannot let you. All right. How the hell did you, I'm sorry, you got a cross in the background. I didn't mean to, like, say how in the hell, but how did you get Mel Brooks to write a blurb for you?
Well, Mel Brooks is one of my good friends, so that.
Are you kidding me?
No. Everybody says that to me. Are you kidding me?
Wait, how, okay, before. How do you even know Mel Brooks? How do you meet him? And how are you so good friends with him that he wrote a blurb on your book?
He's wrote a blurb on all three of my books. So,
all right. So tell me, I gotta learn. How are you that close with Mr. Mel Brooks?
Well, you have to read my book, but just for you and your guest, I'll tell you how I met Mel. It's in the book, by the way.
Okay.
So when I was an actor many, many moons ago, and I'm still acting, but I would sneak in the studios at Fox.
Mm. Tell me you were not in Blazing Saddles. Were you in Blazing?
I wish. But anyway, this was after Blazing Saddles. So anyway, I'm in the studio. I'm trying to meet people. That's my What mm-hmm. I would do, I would sneak in. I would wait for the suits to go, come back from lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get in line with him and ask them the time. So they just, the guards assumed I was with that group. So I had it down to a science, getting in the Fox at different studios. And what I would do, I was going there to try to meet casting directors, directors. You know, I was, you know. So anyway, I was doing this every freaking day.
How old were you? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. How old were you at this time?
Probably in the 80s, so I was probably 28, something like that.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm walking around the studio, and all of a sudden, I hear this loud noise from behind me. And I heard the voice saying, "Are you freaking insane?" Welcome to Fox Studio, right? So I'm thinking it's a guard or something. So I turn around, it's Mel. It's Mel Brooks. So he says to me, "I see you here every day. You have the same freaking suit on. I would just wonder if you're insane." Well, I might be insane, but
I love you already, by the way. I really, really do. Just your laughter. I'm insane as well, too. So, don't worry about
Mel,
it.
In a way, he's a comedy genius. But of course, he's insane in a different way than me. Yeah. So anyway, so this is wild. And he said, "I don't want you getting in trouble. I noticed you. You know, if I notice you, security's going to notice you, right? Because I'm doing this." So I said, "Okay, I won't do this anymore, you know, blah, blah, blah." Of course, I didn't listen to him. As soon as he left, I started doing what I was doing. So true story, I had an audition for Charlie's Angels the next day.
Really?
But I didn't know it. I just got that, and I had a legitimate pass to get in Fox. So I thought, well, Fox is a big studio. I'll never see Mel, you know. So I'm walking in the studio, and guess who comes driving by in his Rolls Royce?
Oh. Mel. Wait, he's driving a Rolls Royce? I mean, if anybody's going to be driving a Rolls, it's definitely Mel Brooks.
So anyway, he sees me, and I thought, oh, no. And he starts shaking his head like, oh, Jesus, not him again. You know, that kind of deal. You know? Mm-hmm. So I go running over there. I go, "Mel, I'm legit. I got a pass, man." You know, blah, blah, blah. He goes, "All right, well, tuck your freaking shirt in." You know? Well, that was the beginning of our friendship.
Now, when Mel rolls up in a Rolls Royce, like, does he have an entourage with him?
No.
No, he's just by himself.
Mel is the man. You know, he makes decisions. You know, he's a solo actor.
All right. So, how was Hollywood back in that time? Like, you know. That is the golden age of movies. You know, you had the 70s, 80s, right. And then it started. How was that? Okay, because you see so many of these actors, you know, so-called the struggling actors and stuff.
I get that, Bill.
how, like, when you go there, because you'll meet a waitress or a waiter, and they're all actors. They're because
course.
I had to do the same thing in radio. When I first started radio, I was an intern, and then I became part time. But I had to work another job to make ends meet. How hard was that? Like, what other jobs and stuff were you working at the time when you were trying to be an actor?
Well, every lousy job you can think of. But one of the jobs I had for almost 2 years, I was the head doorman at the Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard.
Are you kidding me?
No.
I swear you might be one of the most interesting guests that I've had on since the beginning of the live stream. I've been doing the audio podcast, and I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I'm always grateful when anybody takes the time, and you showed up, like, you know, pretty much right on time and everything, but how was Hollywood back then, though? You're working at the Chinese Theater. You know, was there a lot of crime, a lot of drugs, a lot of stuff like that going on?
It was really a lot of street people, homeless people. It was not like it is today. I mean, it was pretty wacky out there, you know. So, and by the way, I told Mel I was doing your show, and he said, "You better buy my book."
Well, you know what, though? Then I'm going to, now, I always ask this people, you know, authors, when they come on, audio book version of your book or no?
No, I'm more in the book to me is more like a painting. You got the book in your hand, you know, that's my philosophy on books.
But if you were going to do an audio version of the book, would you voice it yourself?
Yeah, because Mel just did his own audio on his book, and he's 95 years old. So if Mel can do it, I can do it.
Do you all right, and I want to get into the book, but I got to ask you this. Could Mel Brooks do the type of comedy and films that he did in his prime and present day with the cancel culture and stuff that's going on?
Funny you should say that. I was talking to Mel last Friday, and we were talking about this same subject. And he said, no, no, and no. You know, the PC stuff, you can't be funny. Somebody's going to get offended, you know, like Blazing Saddles.
Well,
you know that.
Yeah, but think about that, though. You know, like a lot of people go after Quentin Tarantino saying of his overuse of certain words and stuff. You know, but a lot of the strongest characters in his movies are minorities, African-Americans, Hispanic, anybody like that. So is that something as an actor you just get coming in to a film like that?
Well, you know, the key, the reason Quentin gets away with it, most of them are black actors are using those terms. So, it's hard to, it's hard to get away. Condemn that. So I think that's how he gets away with all that.
On with me right now is James Bailey. James, tell people about the book and where they can find it.
Okay. The book again. Where is it? The Diary of a Manic OCD Bookseller. Okay. I don't know if you can see that.
So do you have OCD? Like, is there any realness?
Come on, man.
Well, I mean, because I deal with obsessive compulsive disorder, I have ADHD. I'm a bipolar manic depressive as well. I got all of them and stuff.
Oh, you got all. I've dealt with them. I said that in my book. If you got one, you got all the rest of them, more or less. You know.
So what's behind the title of the book?
Well, okay, that's a good question. My first book was called Man Interrupted, and Adam Sandler almost did the movie. He backed out the last, right at the end. Mel got him to read the script, as a matter of
fact. Really?
Yeah. Man. So that book was about I had severe OCD, and what I would do, I mentioned it in my new book, I would go hang out with homeless people who had a fear of germs, so I would shake their hand and try to desensitize myself,
I had the older I've gotten, like I grew up, I was like, oh, homeless people, they're lazy. They don't want to work and stuff. And I've come to find out because I spent a lot of time in the, I spent 11 days in an institution.
Oh, wow. You got a book in you, my friend.
Well, you know what? If you want to be my ghostwriter, I will be in. By the way, did you use a ghostwriter?
No, of course not.
You didn't?
No, hell no. This is my third book. I wouldn't do that.
But what I learned is from a lot of the homeless people that, or just people down on their luck, I see a lot of people like, why are you giving that guy a change or something like that? And I'm like, you don't know what their story is. You don't know what they've been through. You don't know the trauma. You don't know that they're self-medicating from any of their problems from their past and stuff. And I love to go out and just talk to these type of people and stuff. And I find it, going out, shaking the hands. I've got some weird OCDs as well, too. I got one with food. I cannot eat a piece of food. Like, if I'm eating a hot dog, I cannot end on an odd bite. Like, I have to end on an even bite. So, like, if I know that I'm going to finish a hot dog on an odd bite, I'll take a smaller bite just to end on an even bite. Does that sound weird?
Well, here's even weirder than that.
Oh, I got to hear this.
I had an irrational fear of drugs. Like, if I walked by somebody who looked like they could be high, I would have to run to the bathroom, wash my face and nose. And the only way I could get in the bathroom, I had to use my foot to open the door. And then I had to wait for somebody to finally leave so I could go out. So anyway, here's how I got rid of that.
Yeah, I got to hear this.
So I started running around with drug dealers, pretending to be a drug addict.
Are you kidding? Oh,
no, man. I took chances. So I would be talking about drugs nonstop. And then Squiggles, the head drug dealer, says to me, Jim, you talk about freaking drugs all the time, but we've never seen you do drugs.
Did you do any? Did you ever do any?
No, they thought I was a narc, an undercover cop. So now I got drug dealers after me.
That
was all I had.
Now, all right, so, I mean...
Well, that's what the first book was about.
So you had an OCD of drugs, but Hollywood
irrational.
I know, but Hollywood doesn't seem like the type of plays.
No, but I got over that. That's why I wrote the book, the first book.
So never, ever any drug use? Never tried anything?
No. I actually tried pot about 6 months ago just because it's legal in California.
Did it help you out with your OCD?
No. It made me think, why I don't... This one thing I don't need. It didn't work for me. So I got that out of my idea list.
You know? Do you mind taking any questions in the chat room and stuff? Willie Cogley writes, Mr. James, did you ever meet Cheech and Chong while you're out in Hollywood?
No, I did not. So I've met everybody. I've met Tom Hanks, Pierce Bronson. Bob Dylan bought my book, by the way.
And you don't mind if people ask any questions in the chat room and stuff?
Well, if they buy my book, they can do anything.
Fish on Jay writes, I bet this guy has some great stories. If you're in the chat room or you want to give me a call here now, you could do that 407-270-3044, or I'll read your questions in the chat room. Now, so let's get back to...
I'll give you a good story. I think your audience get a kick out of this. Mm-hmm. So one day I'm meeting Pierce Bronson. In the bookstore in Malibu, he buys my book. Nice man. Next day, I'm living in my car in Santa Monica. So I'm dealing with the street people, you know, one extreme to the other. And I meet this woman, it's in my book called The Bearded Lesbian. Okay?
I mean, that's a great title. I mean, that's a great title.
But it's a true story. So I'm talking to this woman. You know, I try to be friendly to everybody. And I thought it was a man because he had a beard and she's talking to me and she has some OCD. I could tell. She kept saying, Jim, I introduced myself. She said, should I go back to Fresno? And she said that about 100 times. Jim, should I go back to Fresno? Jim, you're the only friend I got. I just met the woman, but whatever. I said, yes, you should go back to Fresno. And she goes, why, Jim, should I go back to Fresno? Now what I say? So anyway, finally, this goes on and on. I had some sympathy. I could tell she had some OCD and some mental health problems, right? So finally, she says, I finally figured out it was a woman, not a man, just a woman who had, you know, unkept, whatever.
Yeah.
So she says We've to all me been over there. And over.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So she says over and over to me, Jim, will I find a companion? Jim, will I find a companion? She said that 100 times. So finally, I said, I'm tired. I've been doing the book sale and just relaxing and, you know, next to this woman on a bench, right? I said, yes, you will find the man. There's a man out there for you somewhere. And she says, you mother, you know what? I'm looking for a woman. I'm a lesbian. my book.
Now, James, somebody asked a question. What is the hottest? Well, who's the hottest piece of tail from your days in the Hollywood? What? I don't know if he meant like ones that you've maybe been with personally or ones you've met.
Well, I've met so many I could go on and on all day long. But I'll tell you the truth. When I was going to acting school, there's Playboy bunnies. There's every beautiful woman in the world who thinks she can be an actress. Mm. And the kind of woman who wouldn't give an average guy the time of day. But if you're in acting school, you know, that's another. you get the picture.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I always had a lot of women back in those days.
but like, what is the one? What back in your day, what was the one, like, top of the mountain when it came to sex appeal or just being attractive back then, like in your when you were in Hollywood?
There's too many to count. I just go on and on. I met Farrah Fawcett. I was actually working on a film,
Charlie's Angels, right? Wasn't she in
Yes, she was, but you know, really wasn't my type. A lot of people thought she was top of the list type thing.
I know.
Hey, you remember Angie Dickinson? She was really hot and very nice, too. I met her on the beach.
Really? You did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is... Did you ever... I know that this is going to be a weird question. You know, everybody... What part of California were you living in at the time?
Well, I started out in Hollyweird. So... Then I worked my way to Santa Monica. That's what every actor wants to do. Work your way west. You know, get away from the bizarreness of Hollywood if you can, you know.
Yeah. Where did you grow up at, James?
Well, my parents were divorced, so I grew up everywhere. Louisiana for a while, Minnesota for a while.
How was that coming from the southeast of the United States over to the West Coast? Because... You know, everybody has an idea regionally. Like, I was at one time married to a woman from New Jersey, and a lot of people from the Northeast look down on people from the South, and I could almost think and almost bet that people from California would be like, oh, this guy's from Louisiana.
Yeah.
Did you have the accent? Did you have that Cajun accent at any time or no?
I was a little naive. I mean, nothing against gay people. I just got to Hollywood. I'm staying at the YMCA. I'm broke. And some guy's knocking on my door and he's gay. And of course, coming from a small town, Louisiana, I was like, what the hell are you knocking on my freaking door for? But now, you know, you live in LA, you know, you change your views on people. And
What is the message behind the book? Like, you know, when you write a book, and stuff like you're wanting to tell a story, you're wanting to, you know, send out a message. What is the message in a couple of words about the book?
Well, other than it's funny, because I'm, you know, you could tell by I got all kinds of stories.
I could sit here and talk to you forever, Mr. James.
How much time we got? I'll try to squeeze all this in.
No, I'm being dead ass serious. Like, you know, I could sit here and talk to you forever. And stuff, but like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just asking too much of a deep question, trying to be a good interviewer. Maybe you're just trying to entertain people with your book and stuff, and we can just entertain people with our conversation right now.
Okay. Well, actually, Simon Schuster said I should get my book to Netflix, like it would make a good series. But so acting is really my thing now. I just sent a script to HBO. And Larry Hankin is a good friend of mine, and Charlie Gillespie, he's an up-and-coming star. So they're kind of attached to the movie. So if all this goes through, acting is my thing now. So that's
I want to see you blow up as much as possible. Like, seriously. Fish on Jay writes, James, did you have any beef or with any other celebrities?
Yes.
Or have you heard any bad stories about just a-hole celebrities?
I've met so many. Well, what I was doing, I was going to Malibu every day because I had my book in the bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I met Pierce Brosnan. I met Matthew McConaughey. I could go on and on with that. But the only guy this is in my book. I got a chapter called Jeff Bridges.
One of the bridge. Okay, yes. I got to hear this.
Well, I actually liked his dad. I met his dad just by chance.
Was it Bo? Was Bo the dad or
no,
the brother?
Lloyd.
Lloyd. Yeah. Okay, I got you.
So this is crazy. I'm driving to Malibu. I pull in a car. I'm next to Jeff by accident on the Pacific Coast Freeway, next to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of Jeff. At this time, I didn't have a movie option, which I later did. But at this time, that's why I gave my book McConaughey, and people like that. I thought, well, maybe they'll read the book and they'll see a movie. You know, so I was, you know, I was giving them away at that time in Malibu, some of the people. So I saw Bridges and I yelled at him. I said, hey, I'm a big fan of your dad's. You're a real nice man. And he wasn't very, you know, he was kind of standoffish. So I said, I want to give you my book. And he says, well, you know, he said, you're in traffic. You'll get run over. You know, we're in traffic on the highway. But of course, I'm a little crazy anyway. So I jumped down in my car and threw the book through his window. So I don't know if you call that a beef, but you know.
Who was the one guy when, you know, you're still in Hollywood and stuff, but like, what is the one guy that could get any woman that he wanted?
Oh boy,
The biggest ladies' man, the one that just got the...
But he's married, so...
You know, he is such an interesting character.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a nice man. Oh. I met him and gave him my book, and he was very nice to me. But now, Mel told me this later. Mel says, Jim, you could give your book to the Matthew McConaughey's and all these type people, which I did. Tom Hanks, I gave him a book. He said, but they're not going to read it because you're giving it to them free, and they get stuff from the agents to read for scripts. Mm. They're just going to throw it in the trash.
Yeah. So, Willie Cogley writes, Mr. James, what was the fastest car you have ever owned?
Hey, I had a Gran Torino. It was an old one, but it was pretty damn fast.
Yeah. You know, driving around there, they got some pretty iconic highways and stuff. You were talking about the Pacific Coast Highway and stuff. Was the traffic really, really bad back in the day when you were there? Because everybody talks about how horrible the California traffic is.
Well, I tell you the truth. When I get to L.A., I bus everywhere. Because once you park,
really?
If you move your car, you're never going to find a parking spot. And number two, I like meeting people on the bus. I talk them into buying my book. So I just go from one bus. Here's what I actually did. This is in the book. I would go to one bookstore. I would meet somebody. Oh, I never met an author before. Well, I'll autograph it if you buy the book. So they'll buy the book. I'll meet another person.
Wait, so you're selling it like you're a door-to-door salesman. Like, do you keep books on you and do you keep change and stuff on you? Like, if you, no?
It's part of the store. I'm doing the store a favor, really. I mean, you know, even though they don't, you know, once you talk to customers, probably like I did. But I would sell, like Mel would say, Jim, you got to leave one or two books in the store. It's good for your ego, even though I was selling like crazy. So I walk out the store, get on the bus, and my OCD would kick in. I said, well, I got to go. So I sell all of them. I can't stop till I sell all of them. So I go back to the books, sell them all, get on the bus, go to another bookstore. So it's pretty crazy. It's all in the book, you know.
Now, James, so, all right, did you, you know, I had mentioned Quentin Tarantino, did you, you know, everybody said Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was like his love letter to California and Hollywood and the movie industry. Did you watch that movie? Did you have a chance?
Yes, I did. I really liked that movie.
What did you think? Did you ever have a chance? Because one of the big controversies about the movie was that the family of Bruce Lee was kind of upset about the way he was portrayed. Did you ever know anybody that was around Bruce Lee, any Bruce Lee stories or anything like that?
But, you know, you got to take that, you know. You know what I really liked about the movie? It had Joe Namath. Remember in the movie theater?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I like that kind of. That's why I like Tarantino. He does stuff like that.
Namath, he, you know, being an athlete, and he had the swagger. He wore fur coat. You know, I bet he got a lot of the ladies back in the day, didn't he?
Are you kidding me? He was the man.
Ever married, James?
No, I got close once, but
So no, never any interest? Like, what's the closest? Like, I mean, did you ever have one true love meeting somebody out in California?
To be honest, I had a lot of issues. Like, I've been following that Johnny Depp trial, by the way.
What do you think about that, the Johnny Depp trial? Like, can a woman be abusive to a man? Honest opinion.
Getting back to what I was saying, I had some issues with my mother. She gave me up. It was very, you know, so I never trusted women over.
Wait, your mother gave you up?
Yeah.
At what age?
When I was 5.
Do you remember your mom at all? Do you know your dad?
I got back when I was about 13, but the damage was done. You know, I didn't trust women. And I think that's why I never got married. I always had, you know, issues about, like Depp was saying, he had some issues with his mother. And I think that led to his drinking or whatever he was saying, you know.
Any animosity towards your mom?
Oh, yeah. Of course you would have, you know. Why?
Of course. I didn't mean that as a callous question or anything, but, you know, like, I'm sorry. Hopefully I didn't offend you by, asking that. But what about your dad? Did you ever meet your dad?
Well, I know you better than I knew him, so.
Really? Did your mom ever tell you about your dad, how they met and stuff?
No, it's very complicated. But anyway, so what I did, basically, I would have sex with women, never see him again. I was just a young guy. I never could commit to a woman. I couldn't.
Do you regret it?
Well, there's nothing you can do now. It's too late.
I know that.
Not a long time ago.
I mean, that's the best thing, because so many people, you know, have regrets, think about the past. I think a lot of people live in the past
too
much. And I think it's bad because you can't move on. You can't better yourself and stuff. Any other things? So OCD and stuff. You've led from what it seems like, you've lived a pretty clean life. Any legal troubles? Get any trouble or anything?
Well, this is a good story. It's in my book.
I don't want to blow the whole book.
I got so many stories in that book. This is nothing.
Okay.
So I'm in Louisiana, Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm passed out on the drunk tank floor, and some guy's peeing on the urinal, and it's bouncing off and landing on my face.
wait. So you're in the drunk tank, right?
Right.
So you obviously
passed out on the floor.
What was your drink? What was your drink of choice back in the day?
Well, let me finish the story.
Okay, go ahead.
So the guy's peeing on me, and I'm just too sick to move. I got the dry heaves, and I just laid there and let him pee on me. So finally, after a while, I stumbled up, and the jail or whoever the hell it was, I said, "Hey man, what happened? How did I get out of here? I had blackout. I didn't remember." He said, "Well, you're lucky." And I go, "What am I lucky, man?" He said, "Well, you tried to hit a woman and a man in a bar last night, and maybe you did hit him. I don't know, but they came over there to press charges, but they said you looked so pathetic they didn't press charges."
Wow,
another story to my collection.
What was your drink of choice back in the day?
Anything I could get.
Really? You know, I've after I got out of the after I tried to harm myself, I spent 11 days in an institution, and that's when I got out, I was just like, I gotta stop this. I really do think one of the major problems is the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors over-prescribing medication. Yeah. And I was a big alcoholic. I would drink. And it's really, really hard to stop. I'm since September 2019 was the time that I had my last drink.
But you never got pissed on, right? On your face?
No, but I mean, I've had other human substances on me far worse than urine from my drinking days and stuff. So, man, the audience absolutely loves you, James. and can I ask, how old of a man are you?
I'm 72.
Really? I got to tell you, you're 72, but you've got the just personality, just energy of somebody that's in their 40s or 50s and stuff. What is the secret?
I do 1,000 push-ups a day. That's why.
Are you bullshitting me on that, James? No.
In my book.
1,000? Man, I'm
only... No, it's OCD. OCD again.
Do you have a thing with numbers?
No. Like, it's no. Just that. If I don't, here's what I do. I'll take off jogging. Oh, I could do it today. I'll take off jogging. I'll do 50 push-ups. I'll get up, do 50, keep going until I get to 1,000. But what it does, it gets rid of my anxiety. I have no choice. It gets rid of my depression. So I have no choice. So
have you ever, like, because I've been there, like, and you don't have to answer this because it is a personal question. Have you ever, like, contemplating... Like, has your depression ever gotten so bad where you've contemplating, you know, ending
it? I tried
it. You did.
It's in my first book.
Mine, it was only because of horrible, shoddy construction. I tried to hang myself from a ceiling fan, and it ripped out of the roof. So,
you're
I don't know.
Me. I've stuck a potato in my tailpipe. And I ended up with baked potato. So.
Oh, you tried to do the carbon monoxide thing?
Yeah, and I got a baked potato out of it, so I'm a flop. <you look.
laughs> Man, James, I can't thank you enough. Like, I love it. I tell a lot of people. Matter of fact, in my book, I think you're famous. I really, really do. But, like, I tell a lot of people, I just like to talk to people that have interesting stories because there's so many of these celebrities and stuff that you could talk to, and they're not going to tell you the truth. They're not going to be open as much as you are. Have you ever found that your openness maybe has ruined relationships, friendships, you know, Yeah?
Yeah, it has because, you know, Larry Hankin, the actor?
What was the end? It sounds familiar.
Larry Hankin, he was on Friends and Seinfeld.
Yes, yep. I know exactly who you're talking about.
He's one of my best friends, and he's real, anyway, we have different political. So I just say to Larry, we're going to have to agree to disagree. You know, yeah. I don't want to. I'm not going to change your mind. You're not going to. So anyway, that happened. So I tried not to get into the politics and none of that kind of, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I really don't think any of the politicians have our best interests.
Hey, Willie,
in
I love you.
Yeah, Willie says Mr. James is a dude.
I like Willie.
James. So what? So at 72, do you ever intend on slowing down, or are you just going to keep going? Because I got to tell you, you got way more energy than I even do at the age of 42.
Well, here's the deal. I got this great script called Lone Wolf, and HBO is looking at it, and none of this content. So I want to act in this movie. I'm not going to sell unless I act in it. That's
no, you need to hold strong on that, James.
I wrote a great part for myself. So.
What are some of the shows you're watching right now, James, that you're really, really liking? Because I Roots, the Legion of Dude is really, really liking you. They,
I like these guys, man.
Yeah, Roots Calhoun says, we are the Legion of Dude. Now, James, what are – because – there's a lot of great shows with the streaming. What do you think of all the streaming and stuff going on right now? Like, are you a fan of it? Or do you think, oh, man, some of this stuff just needs to be in the cinema?
Well, you know, there's so many. Actually, I tried out for a movie on Netflix, Mike Tyson's Psychiatrist recently. But
wait a minute. Hold on. A movie where you're going to be Mike Tyson's?
No, I just auditioned for that. It's a... It's a biop about Mike Tyson, not right. Of course, there's an actor.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so I tried out for a psychiatrist. Of course, I've had a good experience as a psychiatrist, you know.
James.
Literally.
James, did you see the video of the guy that was messing with Mike Tyson? Like,
yes.
Willie, have you met Mike Tyson? Somebody wanted
to. No, I've never met Mike. Don't really have great interest to meet him. I mean, yeah.
But I mean, like, all right, let me, you know, one of the things, Mike's one of those guys that's changed a lot of his life. He's healthy.
Yeah.
He went through that time and stuff. Isn't Hollywood, everybody loves a good comeback story, right?
That's
like,
true.
Because
that's true.
I mean, look at Robert Downey Jr. Like Robert Downey Jr. was like one mess up away from going to jail for a really, really long time. And now he was Iron Man. He was Tony Stark, like, in some of the biggest movies in the world. And
he almost did my movie, by the way, my first movie.
Oh.
His agent showed it to him. So, I was close. Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie he did, Tropic Thunder, where he was wearing the black
Tom
face
Cruise
and stuff?
That,
yeah. But, Dark Match Steve says this guy would probably play a good psychiatrist.
That's what I said. I've seen so many of them. I know how they act.
Man. All right, James, I got to have you on again. I'm telling you right now, if you know, I will say this, there's a lot of hanger honors when it comes to Hollywood. And I want to, like, I'll have you on again, you know, just in case you do get that big breakout role. Because, like,
well,
I said,
I'm getting really famous lately. I'm getting all kinds of interviews, and Mel's trying to hook me up with Conan O'Brien. So there's a lot of things that could happen. So,
all right,
I'll come back anyway.
I really think Conan got screwed over. Jay Leno, what are your thoughts on him? I'm not saying if you met him, but what are your thoughts? Because he retired.
He's a good, his opening, but I wouldn't watch the show. He's a good comedian, you know, like his you know, what do you call that when the show starts?
His monologue.
Monologue. He's good at that, but you know who I met? Jerry Seinfeld, who's got my book, by the way. He's in my chat. He's got a chapter in my book as well.
Wow. Jerry. So, James, you break big. Out of all the late night talkers right now, you got Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel. All right. So, but hear me out, James. Wait. But if you had to choose, you're breaking out big. You got your first movie role. You got Fallon, Kimmel, and Colbert. What show do you go on if you had your choice?
David Spade. It's the only show I'm going on.
Yeah. I don't
of course,
know.
I'm saying all this bullshit, but if they said, gee, you got a movie, you got a plug, you know I'd jump on it. Hypocrite. Well,
all right, James, before I let you go, tell my audience once again. Yeah, I want to plug the book.
My book now. You better get my book and email me and show me. I'm going to show Mel if you don't.
All right. Well, I'm gonna buy the book and I'm gonna read it for real.
$10.
What? $10? Why? Yeah. Why that price point?
I wanted to make it as cheap as I could because the money is not the deal. I just want people to read the freaking book.
How many pages? Quick read.
About 240. It's an easy read. You know, I mean, it's very interesting though. I think. You know, James, Mel wouldn't put his name on the back, right?
But James, you got to do an audio book. I'm telling you, reading
that's
it.
That's in my. I'm in the back of my head.
You got to do it, man, because you are such a character that I think it would blow up. You're reading it with your personality and stuff. Seriously.
I'll give it some. Let me give you my email in case somebody wants to email me.
Well, do you feel comfortable giving it out?
I got about 10 of them. So.
Well, I mean,
the 10th one.
here, Roots Calhoun says, I'm buying the damn thing.
You're my kind of guy.
He is. Do you feel comfortable if people want to reach out? Do you want to give your email out to them? How can
Seems
people
like you
contact
got some nice
you?
People on here.
How can people contact you?
JamesJimmy122@yahoo.
What's the significance? OCD, what's 122? Any significance?
No reason. I just thought maybe there's a 121. I don't know.
All right, James, man, I got to tell you, I've been doing the live stream. I've been doing the audio podcast since the beginning of the pandemic and stuff. You got Corona yet? Yeah, have you had Corona?
I've had it a couple times, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get tested, but I just assumed I got
it. Do you think it was a lot of hype?
Yes.
All right. I mean, at your age, if you're catching it, and Corona didn't. You know what? Corona probably got in your body, and they were like, you know what? This guy's too crazy for me. I can't be in here. And they the COVID just jumped right out of your body. It was like, yeah, I can't do this.
Well, it seems like everybody got vaccinated, got it anyway, so I don't know.
I did too. Did you get vaccinated?
Yeah, I did, but I wouldn't do it again.
Well, James, man, I got to tell you, this was... I don't know. This really made me happy, and I got to have you on again. Willie right. Cogley says, love this dude.
Willie, I love you as well. All these people, actors, what do they do?
No. They're just people that, supporters of the show that I do. And, you know, like, I'm grateful for every single person. That tells me that they watch or listen to the show because there's an audio. What I do when this show's over with, I take the audio and people can download it and just listen to the audio version of it as well too.
Good.
What does it mean when somebody comes up to you and says they love the book or they bought it?
I got a great quick story about that. I got an email on Hotmail, which I never use anymore. I don't know if anybody uses Hotmail anymore.
Are you on social media?
I'm on Facebook. There's a picture of me and Mel Brooks together on my Facebook in the studio.
So. I'm following you. Will you accept my friend request if I send it to you?
Yeah, if you go to Google, I don't know what the deal is. Go to James Bailey, author, Man Interrupted, Facebook. I think you'll see me and Mel or something.
All right.
But anyway, quick story. I checked my Hotmail, and I never check Hotmail, and I got an email from this guy in London. He's in prison. He said, I don't know if you're James Bailey or not, but I just read your book. It's in the prison library in London, England. But if you are James Bailey, I loved your freaking books. There you go.
Have you ever been
after
to another
audience, right?
Yeah. Have you? Well, I just watched a movie about a United Kingdom prisoner, Bronson, Tom Hardy. Hey, do you like any of the Tom Hardy movies?
Oh, I like. He's great. That guy.
Yeah. I just got done watching Peaky Blinders as well. I really, really enjoyed that. But he did a movie about a very famous convict over in the United Kingdom called Bronson. And he used to love to fight the guards, James, but before the guards would come in to, like, you know, beat him up and stuff, he would rub his entire body. He would strip down completely nude and rub Vaseline all over his body so the guards could not get a hold of him, you know. So he'd be completely nude, and it was like a greased up pig and everything. And he just loved fighting. You been to any countries or anything?
No, but that's pretty cool about the guy in prison reading my book, right? You got to admit that.
Oh, it is.
In London. And I got that email from the guy.
Did you
really
find out?
My day.
You find out what he was in for?
No, I thought maybe he's a murderer. I better not. I wrote him back, but I made it brief. I really appreciate that. Cheers. You know, I don't know what he's dealing with.
Yeah.
But he read my book and he loved it. So.
James, can we be friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah.
All right. I want to keep in touch with you, man. I find you absolutely fascinating.
You better get my book and email me tomorrow and say,
buddy,
James,
will you be my friend if I buy your book?
Oh, I put this in the book. Anybody buys my book, come up and co-cock me. I'm still going to be their friend.
All right, James, tell my audience once again before I let you go, because I want to make sure, where can they find the book?
Go to Amazon and put The Diary of a Manic OCD Bookseller by your new friend, James Bailey.
James.
Butterfly.
Butterfly. I love it. I love it, my friend.
See, he's caught in the jar. He can't get out. That's kind of my logic there.
James, you're one of my favorite interviews of all time.
Oh,
and
I appreciate you, buddy.
I cannot thank you enough. And please, I'm going to have my producer give you all my contact info and stuff. So we can keep in touch, because you're the type of guy that I got to keep in touch with. You're just
you're
too
kind of guy.
You're just too interesting. James, have a great night, my friend.
All right. I love your audience too.
All right, man. Bye.
All right.
Bye. Holy crap. a lot of you guys, I don't know if you, I really don't care if you liked it or not. I love people like that. You know, I've noticed, you know, since my mom moved to this new place, I think James would be interesting no matter how old he is. But I think a lot of younger people do not appreciate the older generation. Do you know how much wisdom and just great stories you can hear from the older generation? I know that I went really, really long with that interview, and maybe you guys didn't like it, but at this point, I enjoyed it. I loved it. Hopefully you guys did too. So I'm going to get out of here. Willie Cogley, that old man slings more. Willie, I think he might have been being a little, like, I don't know. I bet he got a lot of ass. I'm just telling you guys right now, if you get a chance just to sit down with an older person, because I think a lot of people take older people for granted. And I've learned that. I have learned to appreciate the older generation more, because they're going to be able to teach you life lessons, not stuff that you're going to learn in a textbook or anything like that. And that's why I absolutely enjoyed that interview. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here. If you're listening to this audio version, make sure you subscribe on the numerous platforms that I'm on to catch the live show: Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. If you want to catch the audio version of this, The audio version is available on all podcasting platforms, iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes Podcast, 315live.com, thanks to Matt Mayesher, and TuneIn Radio. I appreciate all of the support you guys give me. I hope you guys have a great night. Hope you guys stay safe, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.